Want to open the Bengals Beat podcast reminding everyone we're fueled by 50 West Brewing Company. Now's the time to head out to the production works.
It's where we held our live BBP after the draft.
They have sand volleyball leagues, canoeing, kayaking, cycling, running groups, all based out of 50 West on Wooster Pike. Plus, Saturday, July 7th, you have to come out to the third annual 50 West Punch-Out. It's where local brewers box against other local brewers with quality local craft beer and food as far as the eye can see. Plus, it marks the official can release of Punch You in the IPA, and I will be emceeing the event, drinking coast to coast, and doing my best Michael Buffer impression.
Hope to see you soon down at 50 West, where every beer is a journey. Come join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast presented by 50 West Brewery. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals Beat writers, Jim Osarski and Paul Diener Jr. invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out insider news, listen in on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. You can subscribe in iTunes, Google Play, or your preferred podcast platform. Of course, you can always listen in the podcast section of our Cincinnati.com Bengals app. Let's go. All right, welcome into the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat podcast presented by 50 West Brewing Company. Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ozarski, your Bengals beat writers for Cincinnati.com and the Cincinnati Inquirer are here with you. How are we doing, Jim?
I'm good. Real football is happening or about to happen.
No, it's not.
Yes.
How is this real football?
What
football is happening?
Men running around on a field.
But
doing a thing.
That's true.
Rookie camp is this coming
weekend, and that will be men running on a field doing a thing.
Throwing things to each other on some cones and being coached.
The ones that happen now, though, the like real men who are real men on real team.
Right.
We can't see.
Yeah. What if you're on the bridge? What if I'm on the bridge?
You can't go on the bridge?
What if I had to walk to work across the bridge? It took me 2 hours, like right during practice.
What? You're just a man walking to work.
I know.
You're allowed to walk to work?
Slowly.
At whatever pace you choose.
Well, yeah. At that particular time of day.
That's just how you go to work.
It's not my fault.
And that's the pace you walk at. Yeah. What if I am staring out the 18th floor window of the Inquirer because I'm at work? And that's where I work.
Yeah.
And in order to keep myself calm and keep myself sane, I like to look out the window because it helps calm my nerves. And I'm just a man trying to stay calm at work. And if it happens to overlook the Bengals field while men are doing practice things,
yeah,
then what? Is that wrong?
That's what that staff email was about, the strange man looking out a window.
Yeah.
No.
They did tell me to stop doing that.
No. No, I do. I mean, everyone knows. Like, the off season is short, but it's long, and like it's rookie camp is what it is. You know, especially on a team that really doesn't have like skill position rookies who matter this year. And they're the one starter they drafted probably isn't participating. You know, in any meaningful way. So, you know, it's okay. It's kind of sort of football.
Sort of a thing. So we got a lot to get to today. So we'll kind of, let me give you a rundown of what we're going to do. You mentioned it. We just talked about it. Rookie mini camp will be this coming weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We'll be down there for you Friday and Saturday. They close it off, on that last day on Sunday. So we'll have, you know, general how do they look type of guy. I mean, there's only so much they're really doing out there, but we'll talk to some. They'll have the UDFAs in for the first time. They'll have some tryout guys in, and obviously the draft picks will all be in here. And at that point, they're here the rest of the offseason. So,
right.
And they'll still be, they're still in going through their phase two now, right?
Yeah.
Two and then three.
Right.
Yeah.
This is actual phase two is means actual field work.
Field work.
Where Andy Dalton was able to get out and actually call Bill Lazor's offense and throw a pass through a receiver running.
But it's like light walkthrough
stuff. Yeah, it's not. Yeah, it's basically pitch and catch.
Yeah. So, but no contact or anything like that. And there's no real contact even in phase three.
Right.
Once you get into mini camp and stuff. I mean, it's just more activity. Okay, so that's what's coming up. In this, we're going to have a little bit of reaction to the podcast last week at 50 West, which thanks again to Duke Tobin for joining us. It was great to have him right after his very long 11-pick, yeah, seven-round weekend to come and break it down with us. We had a good time. A couple beers were had. Delicious 50 West. I had the Coast to Coast. Duke liked the Going Nowhere,
right?
The hazy IPA they, yeah, have now, and you of course had Coffee Please,
yes,
because you always have Coffee Please. shout out to 50 West, won a silver medal for their barley wine beer.
Wow.
Yeah, in the world beer or whatever. I never know what exactly it is. They're very proud of it, and it's great for them.
Yeah.
But I never know exactly what the award is, but they won a silver medal, like, in the world for barley wine. It's a great beer if you get a chance, if you ever want to give that a shot. Anyway, congrats to them. So we're going to have a little more reaction to Duke. We're going to break down, take our kind of first look at the new 2-deep/53-man roster with all the new picks here and kind of see how these picks fit in and kind of who has been applied pressure and maybe what that we think that will look like come opening day in Indianapolis. Little news this week to get to. NFLPA filed a grievance on behalf of Eric Reed.
Yeah.
That obviously will involve the Bengals because of his visit here, the only place he took a visit to, and
right,
they're sort of named while not being named,
right,
in the grievance. So we're going to get into the details of that here momentarily. Also, Bengals special teams coordinator Darren Simmons was one of 9 special teams coaches involved in the special teams safety summit they had in New York last week. And they brought some proposals to the table that are going to change dramatically what the kickoff looks like, trying to make it safer and also actually less ceremonial and more exciting.
Yeah.
So I'll have some details of that. I'll bring even some Darren audio talking about what those meetings were like. And so you give you a feel for how things will change and what might happen there. Some extras from draft weekend that we're excited about. I want everybody to hear from Billy Price. You'll hear from Billy Price. I got a cut up of all of our failed attempts to get the rookies on the phone, which was really funny. We will power rank birthdays 1 through 30. We're both 37.
Yeah.
So we're going to power rank birthdays. What were the best and worst? Are the best and worst of your birthdays that you can have up to age 37? Because that's all we know about.
Yeah.
I assume 40 is going to be terrible, but I just don't. I can't talk about that yet. And then we'll talk about what's making us happy and what's making Jim mad. All right, let's start and get the news out of the way here real quick. So Eric Reed came in for a visit before the draft. The Bengals were kicking the tires on him. He came in. The reports that were leaked out immediately after him leaving here was contention that he was asked about his previous national anthem protests and if those will continue. He went right, well, we don't know that he was him.
Right.
You have to assume that his camp went directly to Pro Football Talk,
right,
if not him. That would,
right,
not come from inside of this building.
Yeah.
So now we have a grievance officially filed by the PA where the Bengals aren't named. It is said that a team asked,
right, which
questions
is weird,
about your future of that, and that is against the rules of the CBA, yada,
right,
yada, yada. So the grievance includes the Bengals, but they're part of a final point of 5 points,
yeah,
that are made on there is why they have this contention. What does any of this really mean is really the question where we got to jump off at.
Yeah, I think, you know, if it's the Bengals, it's kind of a PR slap, you know. I mean – look, earlier this offseason, one of the things that was making me mad was how all of these owners just kept kind of stepping in it, quite publicly.
Yeah.
You know, with comments and things and just sort of an issue, a public issue that had sort of gone away And then yet, you know, Bisciotti and Stephen Ross and Bob McNair. I mean, like, all these guys are coming out and just saying stuff.
Yeah.
Well, Mike Brown's never publicly said anything. Anything that's out there is, as you said, through one. So really, I think locally, it's Mike taking more shots, more body blows, and that is what it is. After that, I don't really know how this. It's more of a league issue.
Yeah,
of course the Bengals are part of the league, but as of now, I don't see how
it doesn't really affect.
Other than, again, Mike, you know. And Mike's not afraid to take any heat if he feels
and
it's deserved.
You know, I'm not going to jump down this political path, but I will say I think there's more positive response that I've seen locally to what has happened between Eric Reid and Mike Brown than anything negative. And I mean, I think when you really look at it, here's the weird thing. So this guy is not getting calls, right?
Yeah.
No one's talking to him. He convinces one team to bring him in for a visit. They do. He immediately takes those questions that he had to have known he was going to get and turns them into a grievance.
Yeah.
It feels a little like a setup. Now, no one knows but Eric Reid and his camp.
Right.
But, boy, that's weird.
Yeah.
To immediately turn to Pro Football Talk and then immediately flip that into a grievance with the PA.
Right.
Proof. See? Gotcha.
Yeah.
You know, like wearing a wire stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just, look, the PA is going to PA.
Right.
They're going to fight for their players and what they believe they should be allowed and not allowed to do via what's been bargained and feel like this is being used against these guys. You guys should have the right to do whatever they want. Okay. That's all fine and good, but the way this went down is just weird and fishy.
Yeah, it is. And we talked about it when he came in, how it was a very real sort of exploratory mission on the Bengals' part. I mean, you know, they were interested in finding a safety. They drafted one. Mm-hmm. And I think that was, I mean, it was clear to me, it was clear to everybody reporting on this team that any safety they talked to at that juncture, there were no offers going to be made. It was just, you know, what's happening and who are you medical, all that stuff that we went through. You're right, it did seem strange. It reeked of sour grapes of, like, I didn't get an offer, therefore this. Now it's out nationally what was said in a one-way only half the conversation.
Yeah, that we know.
Which is important to continue to know, just out of fairness. As I mean, you and I do interviews for a living. Conversations go two ways.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we play for you audio. A lot of times we try to get the questions in there, but it's always – so I still hesitate to just say, like, that's exactly how it played out and how, you know. But anyway, it does. It is very weird. I mean, I guess the interesting thing now, Paul, is, you know, we don't know where the Kaepernick thing sits. We don't know where this grievance files into Eric Reid's collusion case. Are these two different things?
Because this isn't collusion.
No.
This grievance is not about
collusion. Right. So,
it's about you can't ask him that and then say that's why you're not hiring him.
Right. So does that mean, you know, the Bengals get hit with a $500,000 fine, $1 million fine? I mean, I guess that's, I don't know.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, so we're kind of in a waiting game with that.
We are. So but we'll kind of leave it at that because that's honestly where it is. But, this isn't some, not some giant thing outside of right now, just more PR mess. Darren Simmons was at the safety summit, and so basically a push was put out there very clearly by Roger Goodell at the owners' meetings that he want with his ruling of wanting to take the head out of the game and wanting to get more safety precautions made, particularly with the kickoff. And Mark Murphy from the Packers was very open about the need to make these changes, and there's too many concussions happening on the kickoff play in comparison to others. So a committee, basically everyone has gotten on board in this.
Yeah.
There were nine special teams coaches. There were multiple owners. There were current player, former players, media, officials, everybody got together in New York this past week to go over proposals to make the kickoff safer and more exciting, essentially. And
which seems counterintuitive.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. you know, and basically, as Darren kind of told us, the proposal was going to be that they came up with a couple of options are going to go on the table at the next owners' meetings, which is going to happen in about 2 weeks from now, and they will vote on what it's going to be. And basically what it amounts to is eight players will line up with a 15-yard no-contact zone. And so instead you have to have eight on the line, and then on the other side, there will be no running by any players, and they have to stand at the 34, essentially, 1 yard off of the restraining line. And there will be no more wedges, which is multiple players standing together hitting. Yeah. You can have two players together. The other one has to be more than 2 yards away. So you get more – it becomes more of an athletic play where you have more – ideally, when you take wedges out of the game, the big guys are not as needed.
Yeah.
So you will, and there's also going to be a rule about immediate contact when these guys get to the 15-yard line. It's complicated, and that's part of what Darren's argument was. Let's just keep it simple.
Right.
The change that we're trying to make, and it might be getting a bit complicated. But anyway, the changes, I think what you will see is the possibility of more returns, smaller guys, more space play out there. And you get a better chance for more quality returns, possibly, or it's just kickers just launching for touchbacks over and over again because they don't want to see anything else. Anyway, that's kind of where that's at. Interesting. The most interesting element to me is why does the league not act like this with more things? Get everybody that could have an important voice into the room, figure out some answers, and come up with it. It seemed like that they should be doing. Having these kind of summits, essentially, for more things than just this.
Yeah.
You don't care, do you?
Well, it's just because they don't do any of this stuff right. That's why.
I feel like, well, this was done right for once.
I don't know. I mean, sure. You know, just let's just call what it is and get rid of the kickoff. I mean, put it at the 25. I mean, that's what they want. Because you know what's going to happen? They're going to do this little thing, and Alex Anderson might not make the team. Darius Phillips is going to run down there and get drilled in the face because he's running around, and some other dude's running around, and you're going to get some blown knee. I mean, at the end of the day, they want to get people in positions of power want to get rid of this play, and no matter what they do, they're going to find the stats to get rid of the play. So let's just get rid of it.
Right.
In my opinion. I mean,
This is reactive PR stuff.
And this is stupid. And it goes into the whole other, you know, don't lean your head forward thing. Where does that fit into this? You got, okay, that's fine. You got all these, little dudes running around on kick returns. So is Alex Erickson not allowed to, does he have to run straight out of bounds? Can he not dip his shoulder to cut in? Because now he's lowering his head. What about the little dude who's got to tackle him? How is he gonna
officiating all that stuff?
That's what I'm saying. So, I mean, I get your point where they should get more people together. I guess if you want to do this, it should be for 19. You know what I mean?
The lateness of this. I mean, they've already had the draft. They've put together their 90-man rosters, and now here you are changing the way that your special teams, a core part of your special teams, is going to have to play.
So here's rookie camp. Right? Yeah. Okay, now 95% of these guys aren't going to be here in a couple weeks. But you still have to teach. What did we hear about draft all last week, Paul? Malik Jefferson, special teams. Darius Fields, special teams. Devontae Harris, special teams. What is Darren actually going to teach these guys this weekend? Well, guys, this is the thing we do with the sticks behind our hand. This is how you properly break down. Oh, but by the way, in 3 weeks, we might not be able to do this because you can't lower your head. And then, Darius, yeah, you know how you're running this back? We might have to totally change this and forget. You're right. They should do these things, more often, but it shouldn't be
this time of year.
This time of year. Yeah. This should be for 19.
This should have all happened. If you really cared about this being a change next year, it should have happened, and it should have been all rule changes.
Right.
finalized at the league meetings in Orlando,
right?
A month ago,
right?
And not now when everybody set their rosters. Now you're going to change the way the game is played,
right?
You know that's the silly aspect of this, but it's all PR reactive stuff.
So
that's where we're seeing. You know, Darren said, "Look, I'm going to teach the proposals these next couple weeks."
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to teach because I want them to be ready for it and not have to spring it on them in camp when we're just talking scheme and like trying to get a roster together. Yeah. This is the time to teach that, but we don't know if it's going to be it. So I'm just going to teach it with what the proposal we put forth so at least they are aware of it. And it's in their head.
Right. You know, by the way, they only get like 60 minutes of time together and they can't contact each other.
All right. Let's dive a little bit into, let's talk any reaction. You know, if you haven't listened to last week's podcast, I highly recommend you going back. It ended up being a little over an hour with Duke. We did about 40 minutes of talking about players and scenarios and trades and all kinds of stuff. And then we did sort of a Q&A after that, which went great. And thanks to everybody that came out to 50 West. It was great to have you guys down here. Really a fun event. Looking forward to those, and we're hopefully going to keep doing those is our plan into the future. Whenever we've got kind of big moments in the year, we like to get out there with you guys and get you guys in the conversation. So thanks again to everybody at 50 West, Optimistic Bobby, and all those for joining in. But, yes, we had kind of a Q&A, which was a great discussion. Got Duke to laugh talking about Sean Brewer and his smoking habits and many other call it, ask the question from everyone, what the hell is wrong with John Ross? lots of good stuff in there. So if you haven't listened to that, I highly recommend going back to last week's podcast with Duke from 50 West. Any reactions that you had, anything that kind of, you know, looking back on it that you found that he said that was interesting or that kind of perked your interest a little bit?
Yeah, trying to twist my words.
He was trying to twist your words.
Logan Wood says you had to challenge Andy Dalton. That's not what he meant.
He was getting after you on that one.
I thought it was interesting. I mean, I guess most GMs would say every player they drafted, no matter if it was the last pick, Mr. Irrelevant had like a fifth round grade, you know. But Duke's earnest. He's always been honest with us. So when he says, you know, to me that he thinks Auden Tate's the biggest steal of the draft because it was his last pick. I understand it's like an easy answer to make, you know, because it was so late. But yet, like, when I kind of looked at the draft class, Paul, like, I could see that.
Yeah.
In the sense of, like, I could see him actually beating out Cody Core. And I could actually see him catching touchdown passes.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, Cody Core, when he was drafted, I didn't know what he was, and then he was hurt, and then he didn't catch a single pass at all in 2017.
He can't really play receiver.
So, you know what I mean? So, like, mm-hmm. I guess that I don't know. For whatever reason, it was just sort of that struck me, and I guess it'll make me pay attention to Auden Tate a little bit more closely.
Yeah.
In camp than maybe I would have in a crowded receiver room.
One interesting thing about Auden Tate that I actually just looked this up, I'm going to pull it up right now, is I went and looked up because, you know, he's getting ripped for his combine, right?
Yeah.
He ran a 4.68, which is, you know,
not good.
Sundial stuff.
Right.
But so I went and looked up because Pro Football Reference has the combine stats in there now, so you could search combine. So I searched since 2011, which is really, you know, when the rules changed, it became so much more of a speed league, obviously.
Yeah.
So I went back to that data. That's why I picked that point. Anybody drafted, a receiver drafted with a 4.6 or slower, 4.60 or slower, there's 19 of them since 2011. A few interesting names on there that you might not think of as slower receivers, but if you're looking for comps, right? Now, you know, I'm going to tell you the fact that there's a few guys that were drafted really high is interesting. There's one first-round pick. It was Kelvin Benjamin. That's the kind of style that Auden Tate – now, Tate was a seventh-round pick for a reason. Benjamin was a first-round pick for a reason. But if you're talking about style and coming from the same school, you know, a big guy who, you know, same about the same vertical. Benjamin ran a 4.61, but high points well, contested catches well. That's what they're looking for. They don't. I don't think anybody's thinking they have Kelvin Benjamin. But it's interesting on this: Devin Funchess, Allen Robinson, Jarvis Landry, all Mohamed Sanu, all ran 4.6 or slower. So there's guys. Now, those guys were all drafted towards the top, though. You get to the day two, there's nobody that's had any kind of a career back there. I mean, guys that are there for a reason and they're slow,
right.
It's a tough, it's an uphill climb, right. But you can see where they're going for with that. And maybe they do feel like they have a Kelvin Benjamin type. And I thought, I just wanted to bring that up because I had looked that up and thought it was interesting, and I wanted to get credit for looking it up because I don't know if I'm going to ever write about it, but I thought it was interesting and wanted to talk about it. You know, the trade stuff always intrigues me.
Yeah.
I wrote about it in BX because I thought it was the most interesting thing from the conversation. It was a nice behind-the-curtain sort of look. When he talked about they get 25 to 30 phone calls about trades over 3 days and put out about the same amount, that's a lot of work in the phones, and that's a lot of deals unmade.
Yeah.
Right? And we have, you know, I wrote specifically about the one of them trying to get back up in the third round. I thought that conversation was really interesting.
Yeah.
We had heard that.
It's for Mason Rudolph.
Yeah, right. Very vaguely we'd heard that from Marvin, which is why he dipped out of his presser with us on day two.
Yeah.
And then Duke sort of went a little deeper into it.
Yeah.
About how much they did want to get up there, and then all of a sudden saw the guy come off the board. The response I've gotten most since I wrote it was, well, who was it?
Right, right.
I mean, tea leaves on that, knowing, I mean, I had a pretty good bead on everybody they were targeting there on in that third round. And if you look at who was available, you look at where they were talking about getting up to, you look at somebody going off the board, and you look at some comments that we have heard in the process – Arden Key from LSU feels like that was probably the guy.
Yeah.
I think that there's others in that grouping that they would have also been willing to come up for. But if I had to, you know, if I had to put a look on it, you know, I still think Orlando Brown, but, you know, I can't get anybody to really bite on me making that contention. But, you know, that's my guess on who that was. For those that have been asking, of course, our BBP listeners get the
right.
You know, I can't. That's not something I would write.
Yeah,
because I don't. You know, this is more of a speculative conversation here.
Yeah.
That's just putting A, B, C, D, and E together on that one.
What about the quarterback?
Oh, everybody wants to know about the quarterback. Yeah. I mean, if Logan Woodside, look, the chances of him making this team are about a coin flip. He's got it. A, he's got to beat Jeff Driskel.
Right.
B, they have to decide he did it well enough to keep a third quarterback.
Again.
Which everyone has talked about not really liking
no,
doing
they
that.
Don't. They hate it.
And look, now that A.J. McCarron is gone.
Right.
There's not as much reason. They only basically did it because the McCarron trade could happen and they wanted to have a backup in house.
Yeah.
They don't like keeping three quarterbacks.
No.
It has... You
so
know,
Jeff Driskel's running around catching passes in
you
practice.
Know, I talked to Darren. I talked to Darren last week when we were talking about the safety summit stuff, and I was asking him about special teams guys they drafted, and how they seem to get a lot of those. And he pointed out something that I wrote about at the end of the season, and that's our roster the last year for sure, and really the last couple years has gotten out of whack, and been out of position for what they really need to have an effect of special teams. Part of that, one spot of that, has been keeping this third quarterback. That's one special teams guy that they don't have.
Yeah, when you're talking about a 46-man roster, active game day roster, that matters.
And then you throw in all the injuries that they've had on top of it, particularly at special teams type of positions and doing – other weird stuff in other spots. It's gotten cattywampus, as I like to say. And so, but here, you know, so I think this was kind of, I would be surprised. They made a concerted effort to hit special teams in this draft. I would be surprised if they have interest in keeping a third quarterback.
Right.
Logan Woodside could be a guy they could get onto their PS.
Yeah.
Probably.
For sure.
I would think.
I would think so.
So that makes
sense. The Jets
sense.
Have like 9,000 quarterbacks they got to cut anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, anyway, you talk about uphill climbs.
Yeah.
He would have to be real damn impressive. He would basically have to win the backup job.
Yes.
Which I can't imagine a seventh round pick is going to come in here and, although
beat
he's
out
competing
Matt
against Matt Barkley, that's,
yeah.
He should be able to win that.
Well, yeah.
But they like Matt Barkley.
Yeah, they do like
Matt
Barkley.
They did give him a 2-year deal.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. All right. Well, that's a good transition for us. To talk about this, look at the two deep, okay, and the 53 and where we. I'm gonna run down my. I plotted this out. Stop me if you hear something you know, because we have not talked about this.
No,
we like to keep it fresh here.
Yeah,
keep it fresh for you. This is my version of the two deep. Stop me if something strikes you, okay. And by the way, my two deep now. I have changed how I do this. Is a 12 positions on both sides.
You love adding positions.
Dude, slot corner and third linebacker, both are in there. This is a sub-package league, Jim. I'm not going to put 11 guys out there and force me to pick if we're a nickel. No, it's 12 spots each, so 24. 48.
You sure about that?
Look, you're the one that doesn't know math.
Hey, I know that only 46 can play on Sunday, so you're already two over.
I'm already two over. Well, you can pick two out of the back end that aren't gonna sit. That are gonna sit. Okay, so my two deep, the quarterback.
Yeah.
Is Andy Dalton. You okay with that?
I believe that will be correct.
Yeah, okay. The wide receiver one will be AJ Green. Do you believe that will be correct?
Yeah.
All right, we're not gonna go on like that. Okay. Here's my starters: Dalton, Green, John Ross, Tyler Boyd, Cordy Glenn, Clint Bowling, Billy Price at center, Christian Westerman at right guard, Jake Fisher at right tackle, Tyler Eifert at tight end, Joe Mixon at running back, Ryan Hewitt at halfback tight end position. So it's the one extra.
Yeah.
Are you just going to yell at me about John Ross not starting? Or?
No, you have him starting.
No. You're going to say he's not going to be starting, or are you going to think he's going to
be
starting?
No, he's not
going to
be starting.
You don't think? You think it'll be LaFell?
No. I mean, yeah. I mean, we're doing that weird paper Marvin paper thing. And, yeah, Brandon LaFell is going to start. And
so
Ryan
stupid.
Hewitt is, I mean, he might be a bubble guy for this roster.
But he's the start. You think he's a bubble guy on the roster?
Yeah. I have no idea what Bill Lazor is going to do. And is this dude signed a contract? He's played like 20 snaps for 2 years.
They're trying to reestablish the run and be a hardcore running team, and you're not going to keep Ryan Hewitt?
I don't know. Maybe.
I think Ryan Hewitt will start the majority of games because they'll come out in the damn I formation like it's 1995.
I mean, Tyler Eifert's, I think your conversation with Marvin in January about maybe trying to limit Tyler Eifert's exposure.
Indeed.
That could help. So, LaFell, I just, until they cut him, he's going to start. And then I also am your right side of the line, I guess, if I were to peg it. I would think Bobby Hart wins that job, and I think Alex Redmond will win that job. Bobby Hart at right
Fisher,
tackle.
You think Fisher will not win the job?
No.
You think Bobby Hart will win right
yeah.
tackle? Really?
Yeah.
Why do you think that?
Because Bobby Hart has played right tackle in this league, and
poorly.
Jake Fisher talks about playing right tackle in this league poorly and hasn't been healthy since he was drafted. Now, this is set aside. We're assuming his heart condition is perfectly okay.
Mm-hmm.
But here's a guy who walked in as a rookie and had shoulder issues and then back issues. And I just see a guy who is very motivated, will say a lot of great things. He'll be on this podcast. He's already said great things. I just don't know if at the end of the day he does enough to actually win. I haven't seen enough out of him in three seasons to think he'll even be on the field enough to win. I don't know. I mean,
it's an open competition.
Yeah. I wouldn't doubt he has way more talent than Bobby Hart. I just, you know, Jake Fisher's film ain't any better than Bobby Hart. And Bobby Hart at least plays. So I'm going to go with that, and I think Alex Redman. I don't know. I'm kind of on that train. I started writing about him a little bit last year.
Yeah.
I think he beats out Christian Westerman.
Yeah. Interesting. That I mean, those two spots, when we go
– That's a coin flip, honestly.
When
like,
we go
yeah.
into camp, those will be – when you're talking about where are the camp battles, the camp battles will be right guard and right tackle on offense. So
– And maybe Ross
to wrap To wrap that conversation, my second team, Barkley, Malone, LaFell. I have Erickson in there, but that's a sixth receiver.
Yeah.
I don't – I think now with Tate – he probably makes – I mean, he would have to help to play his way onto the roster.
Yeah.
But Erickson, I don't think, makes this team because they basically drafted replacements for him at multiple positions.
Right.
If you don't like him as a receiver, well, they've got – I mean, hell, LaFell played slot the majority of the year anyway.
Right.
So there's your backup slot guy as well.
Right.
And you've got a new guy in Tate. You're not going to keep seven. I mean, you're going to keep seven receivers if you're trying to cattywampus the roster.
Right.
And then returner, he's unnecessary anymore if you keep Darius Phillips, which they will.
Right.
So tough. I mean, tough noogies for Alex Erickson. You like that? You ever tough noogied before?
Oh my God! It's I've heard that word, but it's been a long time.
Oh, I like tough.
Thanks,
noogies.
Dad.
Yeah.
Go, yeah. That's
yeah. I say dad things now. It's
yeah, you
nuggies.
Do.
So, all right. So, that and then backups. I have left tackle backup Cedric Obwehi, Trey Hopkins at guard, TJ Johnson at center, Redman and Hart. We both mentioned my other two guys in that mix. Now, that's 10. And I'm not, I didn't mention Rod Taylor.
Yeah.
Who they drafted in the seventh round. He'll have to work. He could displace any of those guys I mentioned.
Right.
Hopkins. I mean, hell, Redman could play
right
off this team.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Taylor, he said he's actually curious to watch him at some tackle. He could work his way into a tackle backup.
Yeah.
He could displace Bobby Hart. But I mentioned 10. It'd be hard to see them keeping 10 linemen, offensive linemen. So a couple of those guys are going to go. I mean, a guy like Cedric Obwehi, he might not even make this club. He might not.
Yeah, I guess,
If he came out and Obwehi'd it, right?
Yeah.
And let's say Rod Taylor played well, or both Bobby Hart and Jake Fisher played well.
Right.
And you're like, who are we? And Trey Hopkins played well, and they start trying him at tackle, which they have interest
in. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I'm just saying, I don't think anything is secure for him at this point.
Right.
How far can he fall down the roster? Anyway, an interesting thought. Then Gio, Seaton Carter, and then you go back into the further back into the running back room. Tyler Croft, CJ Uzama, Mason Schreck is whatever he's going to end up being. We shall see. I guess there's a battle between Brian Hill and Trey Carson.
I thought Mark Walton gets that shot. How did
but that's three.
They're not keeping four running backs, are they?
You think they're just going to keep three?
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to count all your guys at that point. I mean, we're well over 20.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, so
all these people who are names people are familiar with who have been around, a lot of those guys are going to be gone.
Yeah, no, I think guys like – I think like a Seaton Carter, that's
yeah,
done.
Yeah, I assume he's –
I
assume that's done as well.
I think it's three running backs because those guys – I mean, no offense to the back end of that room, but, I mean, you can
Brian
get that
Hill
guy.
And Trey Carson, yeah.
You can get that guy if there's an injury. Mark Walton's your special teams contributor in that room, and, you know, you're using – I mean, if Hewitt's on the team – you know, where does Moritz Boehringer fit into this?
He don't fit anywhere.
He might fit in somewhere.
They get a free practice squad spot for him.
He could beat out CJ Uzama.
He's not going to – is he going to – I mean, is he going to be that guy?
Maybe.
I hope so for us.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Need some Germans.
But you know what I mean. So, yeah, I really wouldn't quibble too much with the rest of that.
Okay. Let's go to defense. So starters, and honestly, in some of these positions, I don't even know what to do with some of these guys. But here's what I have: my defensive line, Dunlap, Atkins, Billings, Willis, in base. Then behind them, Lawson, Glasgow, Baker, Michael Johnson. With Sam Hubbard and him kind of on the same line, That's the, that gets you. I mean, that's 9. Andrew Brown is 10.
Yeah.
Here we go again with the big defensive line room full of guys. I mean, look, if you're keeping 8 guys, they ain't cutting Sam Hubbard.
No. I mean, this is the question. I mean, of course, everybody's yelling, screaming right now to cut number 90. And he is the natural. I think Ryan Glasgow's got to win a job. I think Andrew Billings got to win a job. I think if that's the whole group, and let's just say that's, I mean, they've kept 10 linemen in the past.
They have.
They're not afraid to do
that. They have. They could do that.
So if you're running that, again, this is still Marv, and until they take guys away, Michael Johnson's starting.
Yeah.
Whether or not he plays, I don't know. Chris Baker's starting.
You think Baker would play in front of Billings?
Yes. So to me, those guys, quote unquote, start. They're the first names on the paper depth chart. They get the first snaps unless, I think there was a day Carl Lawson did. Maybe it was Green Bay where he, quote unquote, started because they were nickel the first play of the game. So, but that's like a small quibble. So I think Andrew Brown has got to win a job. I mean, he's interesting, but they're not keeping 11 picks.
Correct.
And I think he's one of the 11, along with Rod Taylor and Auden Tate.
Sure.
I mean, all Devontae
those
Harris.
Those 6 guys
right.
picked in the 5th and 7th round, any one of those could go.
So I think
Absolutely.
Those, yeah. So, but I think Glasgow, I think Andrew Brown and Ryan Glasgow could be fighting for the same spot.
Yeah.
I think they give Billings the year.
Yeah,
I don't think he's
going to give Billings the year.
Yeah. So,
absolutely. So, and injuries up there change everything.
Right.
So that's the line. So then going through the 4-3 linebackers, Burfict, Vigil, Preston Brown. I have obviously Burfict will start the year on suspension. That'll clear one spot. Then behind them, Jordan Evans, Vinnie Ray, Malik Jefferson.
Yeah.
And then back behind them, Hardy Nickerson, Brandon Bell are in there with some other guys. So that's fairly straightforward.
I think so.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see if a new UDFA or Hardy Nickerson find a way to sneak on for the first 4
weeks.
Yeah,
it was a question of like which UDFA could make the team, and my first thought is none, because none did last year. You got all these draft picks you got to cut. But the Rollin Jones kid is interesting because he's a linebacker. Duke Tobin talked about him a little bit. He's got 40-something sacks at a small school. Look, you got to get to the quarterback in this league. Chris Carter made this team getting the quarterback a couple years ago.
And already discussed creating the Peter Boulware position.
Right. I mean,
so a linebacker that rushes more, I think, is going to be part of Terrell Austin's team.
So that may mess up the D-line room. If this kid comes in and is beating Cordy Glenn and is looking like Carl Lawson did a year ago, and he wins a spot, and he's like a special teams guy, but like he's the one interesting guy, because I don't think Brandon Bell, like, we saw
enough
solid dudes, guys who, but they I think they look kind of overmatched playing defense at the end of last year.
Indeed.
Hardy Nickerson. So, yeah.
Now, they were also rookies.
Yeah.
So did some of the guys that were drafted that were out there.
That's true too, man.
So, all right, let's going into the cornerback. Now I'm in the slot with the slot corner. So William Jackson III, Draker Patrick, Darquez Denard as your starting three. And then then
this is an interesting room with all these picks.
Because once you get past that, it's a whole lot of shrug emoji.
Yep.
I mean, Darius Phillips, Kavari Russell, Josh Shaw, is he in that room now playing corner behind Darquez?
I think so.
That's what I have as the top 6, and then Devonta Harris, obviously. So you've got Harrison Phillips, the 2 5th-round picks, Kavari Russell, who's been around but not gotten on the field, really. Josh Shaw, who's gotten on the field, and that's been part of the problem.
Right.
And so where does that fall? And then you throw in the safety room, which has one extra guy, with George Iloka, Sean Williams, Clayton Fedulum, Jesse Bates, and then Brandon Wilson, the 6th-round pick from last year, with all the speed, who we didn't really get to see much of.
Yeah.
This is going to be a very important camp for him. to try to show that he has some place on this roster, and I don't know what that would be.
Yeah, no, you're seeing a lot of battles here. So it's it could be a Wilson. Hey, Wilson Phillips.
Hey,
that was bad. I mean, it could, because like they're kind of the same dude. Like, I mean, that was the joke with me with Brandon Wilson a year ago. Like six touchdowns, seven different ways.
Yeah,
I mean, that was like Darius Phillips all over again. So, what if both of them are great at returning kicks and they're fast dudes?
Yeah.
Who are, I mean, Brandon. I mean, they said a year ago Brandon Wilson could cover. We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
They say Darius Phillips can cover. I don't know. Devontae Harris, Duke really loved him.
Yeah,
he was talking about him like fourth. Yeah, but then yet they insisted on how raw he was as a cover corner. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's like, okay, does that guy then have more value than Josh Shaw, because you know what Josh Shaw is and he's solid. But now you'd rather go with the potential.
Josh Shaw's in trouble.
Yeah. So I think, you know, so that's interesting. I do think Josh Shaw's in trouble. Yeah. I think Brandon Wilson's in trouble, even though they traded up to get him in the
Shaw
sixth
more
round
so because Wilson can still play his way in and prove himself.
Right.
We've seen Josh Shaw.
Yeah.
He's had years to prove himself.
Yes.
They know what he is. They don't know as much what Brandon Wilson is.
No.
And they're going to learn.
And Kavari Russell's interesting, too, because, you know, You can only ride on that draft status for so long,
mm-hmm.
and he was a third-round pick. Who knows? Maybe the Bengals had a second-round grade on him that year. But dude hasn't been on the field. No one has any idea if he could play.
Yeah.
Maybe he can. I don't know.
He can.
Do you just let that guy go because you drafted a fifth-rounder out of Western Michigan?
I don't know.
I don't, you know. So that's fascinating. That back end is interesting.
It is interesting. We'll obviously have plenty of time to continue.
What about a kicker? Who's the second kicker? John Brown. What about John Brown?
What about John Brown?
I don't know. He's got cool hair.
He does have cool hair. Thanks, John Brown, for having cool hair. Appreciate you showing up. Yeah. So we'll have plenty of time to dive into that in the 53-man roster. Let's jump into a couple different things. One, I want to bring in some audio of Billy Price. I'm going to give you about 5 minutes of Billy Price from his introductory press conference. These things are normally awkward. You're asking rookies to sit at the podium with a full room of media and cameras. A lot of these guys come from, they're very media savvy when they get here. But this dude.
Not all of the first round picks in my tenure.
Yeah, I've not been ready for this.
Not ready for
this. This dude is ready.
Yeah.
He's ready to run for president. He showed in ready to go.
Yeah.
So I just want to bring some of the audio of how Billy Price handled his introductory press conference. I think it's important you guys get a feel when we talk about, his charisma and his leadership, and that seems like to be a big part of why they drafted him so high.
Yeah.
It's important you guys to get a feel for that, too. So here's a little bit of Billy Price, and then we'll come right back after that.
How different is your personality as a football player as opposed to a guy sitting?
I mean, I think you have to be able to turn that switch on and off. Again, you got to be a high character guy, somebody that can be approachable, and don't be that guy that people can't talk to you. Especially if you're going to be, you know, an offensive lineman who's supposed to head a program and be the face of the program, you have to be somebody with high characters, high morals. And then once you get on that field, though, you got to flip that switch, and you've got to be able to have no problem tearing somebody's face off. And I think that's something as you come into a program. You know, what we did at Ohio State is that mentality. And to bring that, again, as I go forward, again, bringing the physical play, making sure you're smart, making sure, again, that you're prepared and anticipating anything that defense throws you.
You're an Ohio kid, born and raised in Ohio, with Ohio State, and now you're playing for the Cincinnati Bengals. When I say Ohio pride, what does that mean to you, just coming from that background, just being born and raised in Ohio?
For me, it's you're playing in your backyard, you're playing at home. It's an excellent opportunity, and again, you represent the state of Ohio. You know, being raised in Ohio athletics in high school, playing in Ohio, you know, playing at Ohio State in college, and representing that in the best possible way, and then being able to continue here down in Cincinnati, playing for the Bengals. I mean, for me, it's a dream come true. Playing in the Midwest, being raised in the Midwest, and continuing my career in the Midwest, it's nothing more than I can ask for.
Feel that playing at Ohio State, big venue, big opponents, big conference,
amount of people in the stands? I mean, does that compare, do you think, pretty well for the NFL?
I think so. I mean, there's tough environments no matter where you play at. You know, I played in the toughest environments in college, and I've seen, you know, some significantly tough environments here, you know, on Thursday night, Sunday night, Monday night football. Again, it'll be a little bit of transition and adjustment to it. Because again, you've got all kinds of different bits, a completely different offense, and you got to make sure you're moving on the fly. You know, NFL defenses are very complex, and there's a lot of different packages and a lot of different things that NFL defenses and players specifically can do. So you got to make that adjustment, but it'll be no problem being able to block out that noise and being able to focus on the job.
What is the most consistent piece of advice that you've had people telling you what it's like playing the next level?
Take care of your body. A buddy of mine, Pat Alfine, plays for the Vikings. Again, same thing, take care of your body. Because again, you're going to go through 17 weeks, four preseason games, and then potentially playoffs. And again, you're looking at 20-some games as a rookie. You got to make sure your body and your mind is taken care of. Again, playing, I was guaranteed 12 games in college compared to another 17 plus four, all those games. I mean, it's something, again, you got to make sure your body and your mind are fresh every week and ready to prepare.
You had quite a few games under your belt at guard before, you know, playing center after Alfine went to the Vikings. Did you think about coming out before your senior year, before actually playing the center position?
Yeah, there was a little bit of a moment where I thought about leaving early. Knew that if I played center, I had that versatility and being able to add value to a, you know, an NFL franchise going into next year. So for me, it was a better decision to come back.
Worked out for you.
Too bad.
Right before your last home game, you wrote an open letter to fans, teammates, coaches, what have you. Why did you do that, and was there one element in that that you really wanted to get across more than any other?
So I paired up with a writer with, I think he's with Land of 10 right now, his name is Jeremy Birmingham, the guy who I did a lot of pieces with over the time. And for me, and he approached me with the idea of it to make sure that you kind of give back and give an insight to really what it's like to play college football at, you know, the greatest university at Ohio State. And for me, you reflect on that letter again, the memories, the experiences, and kind of towards the end there to kind of give a momentum for guys coming in and make sure you maximize the program. Don't just play football, be more than just football. Impact the community, make sure you take care of your grades, and make sure that you're completely well-rounded and not somebody who's just a football player. So for me, I mean, it was just an insight to the 5 years and the many, many times, months and days and hours that I've spent around. So,
what kind of reaction did you get from that?
I mean, it was just, I got a lot of people telling me it was a beautiful letter, and people said it got them emotional. But again, it's just insights and my experiences.
Bill, where does that come from, where you talk about character and all this off-field stuff? And certainly parents probably shape a lot of that, maybe high school coaches. I don't know. Is there any influence that you put your finger on that put you in that direction?
Yeah, so my grandfather was a huge influence for me, particularly as I was growing up. My parents were divorced, and kind of my grandfather was a significant male role model in my life for me, and a guy who really taught me how to be a man. So all the experiences, and he was a foreman at GM up in Northeast Ohio, up in Lawrencetown, and he was always the person who believed that you win with people, and you win by treating people right and getting people to do things because of the person you are, not task-oriented. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was a situation where you have to be a human, people, that human element, and making sure that people trust you, you treat people with respect, and all those elements to really maximize somebody. And so for me, it was, again, you've got to make sure you treat people with respect, you're well-rounded, and that brings out the best in people.
Okay, there was Billy Price, and so that was part of draft weekend. Obviously, we didn't have a chance to bring this stuff to you last week when we were doing our live. We didn't want to take away from the Duke show. So we mentioned this last week, when we, a little behind the curtain of how this works, so when we are during draft weekend, every player that they select, we get a conference call with. We are all here at the media room at Paul Brown Stadium. All the team officials and everybody else is here as well. So when a guy is picked, the coach and position coach come down to the press conference room. We go, we have a press conference with them, and then we go back to the media room and do a conference call with the player wherever they are at, New York, their hometown, anywhere, on a boat, on a plane, wherever they are. We do a conference call with them right then, and then write our stories and move on. We try to do that with every pick, and we did that with all 11 picks this past weekend. The conference call acquisition is challenging. Trying to get a hold of these guys moments, not moments, 10 to 15 minutes after they've been selected while they're at their draft party is interesting. And then you quickly can learn a lot about guys. anyway, this year particularly, media relations guru, chief official Kentucky Colonel, P.J. Combs, who gets these calls together, had a particularly rough go of it this year. A lot of challenging situations. He persevered, but it was amazing how these continued. So I've got four of them. I just picked the best four of P.J. attempting to get these guys on the horn for us and the various different issues that crept up. So here is a collection of conference call attempts in the media room by P.J. Combs. Enjoy. All right, let's start with the attempt of second-round pick Jesse Bates.
Hello.
Hi, is this Jesse?
Yes, sir.
Hi, Jesse. This is P.J. Combs. I'm the Director of Media Relations for the Bengals.
Yes, sir.
Hi, I have a few reporters here that would like to ask you a few questions. Do you have a couple minutes?
Not right now. Can you give me a call back like in an hour maybe? Let me see.
No. I'd like to get this done now if I can. Can you carve out 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay, sure. Thanks. Go ahead, guys.
Up next, a couple attempts for third-round pick Sam Hubbard.
Hello?
Hi, is this Sam?
Hello?
Is this Sam? Hello?
If that's Sam, we're in trouble.
Jesse had a great draft party going, too.
Crazy.
Don't
want to talk to you, Pete.
I'll call you back in an hour.
Hello?
Hi, is this Sam?
Hello?
Sam?
All right, let's take a shot at Malik Jefferson now.
Sam, are you going to do the...
I'm sorry, but the person you called has a voicemail box that has not been set up yet.
After a second failed attempt, they finally go to the backup number and get to the bottom of the Malik Jefferson case.
It's 469.
Why don't you just key it in?
Okay.
Hi, is this Malik?
Hello?
Malik?
Yes, this is Malik. I'm sorry, my other phone is charging.
That's okay. This is P.J. Combs. I'm Director of Media Relations for the Bengals.
Moving on to Saturday, it was a new day, but the same problems with fourth-round pick Mark Walton.
Hey. I got another number. I'll try that.
Can I call it?
Hi, is this Mark?
This is Dave Exact. Would you like to speak with him?
Yeah, this is P.J. Combs with the Cincinnati Bengals Media Relations Department. We're hoping to talk to Mark with some of our reporters here. I couldn't reach him on his primary line.
I got him. Give me 1 second.
Sure, thank you.
Mark, where's Mark? Mark. Hold on 1 second.
Sure.
Yeah,
Hello.
Hi, Mark.
How you doing?
All right, pretty good. This is PJ Combs. I'm the director of media relations for the Bengals. I have a few reporters.
Which one was your favorite?
It's always the hang up.
The hang up.
Always. Because Josh Malone had the best one a year ago.
Oh, yeah.
Where PJ introduces himself, does the whole spiel, and then click.
Yeah.
Because usually once he gets him on the phone, yeah, it's okay. But because he says it's with the Bengals. But, yeah, I always loved it. You know.
I liked can we do it in like an hour? I like that one because this I've never heard that one before. Like
that
other
is
things
true.
Can happen. Hang-ups can be on accident. You know, I do enjoy that this voicemail has not been set up.
Right.
Like I like those, but that's a first. Be like, oh, the team that drafted me? Nah, dog. How about in like an hour? I'm right. Not feeling that right now.
Although that might have been a far. I mean, Jesse is you're gonna hear him on this podcast throughout the year because Jesse's pretty good with us. But that. I mean, that call might have been a little more exciting if we would have waited an hour into his draft party.
Yeah, I think so. I think that was the point, was his draft party was in top form right then. He didn't want to walk away from it. And who can blame him?
Right.
But anyway, that's just a little insight into draft weekend that I thought was fairly funny. And to be honest, I spent some time putting that cut up together, and I wanted to get some run.
Yeah.
All right. Power ranking time. Power rankings are stupid, so we like to rank stupid things. This week's power rankings, we are going to rank birthdays.
Yeah,
I'm talking about birthdays. I have birthdays on the mind because my daughter turned one, and I just thought about how awesome the first birthday is, even though you never remember it.
Right.
So top two, bottom two, 1 to 37.
Right.
Because we've experienced 37 birthdays, both of us. What is your top two? I think the top two is easy. I think this is like, and maybe, you know what, every time I say that, though, you surprise me with some weird shit. So what is like, what I think it's easy, but what are your top two?
Top two, well, I will mention Seinfeld here. There's this bit where he said, you know, the beginning of your birthdays and the end of your birthdays are the same. You can't really do anything for yourself. There's other people who invite other people who say that they're your friends. They want them to be your friends. You don't know anyone. You don't remember it. So I am actually going to go with 36 and 37 as my top two.
Top two?
Yeah.
The most recent?
Yes.
Why are you going with those?
I'm still alive. Yeah. To talk and
you made it.
Yes, I made it. Not for any particular reason. Like I didn't get great gifts and whatever. You know, we're old enough now where we can see family and all that stuff. Quite frankly because I'm an adult. I can do what I want, and I remember it. So yeah, I don't have. But I'm not a. It's a little insight into me. Like I don't. I was never like a birthday person.
Yeah.
And I did not really participate in alcohol or really care about it until I was well into my 20s. So that's also part of this.
To the BBP listener, there is no shock that you were not much into birthdays. I mean, if there's anything that anybody would say, hey, what do you think Jim's feelings are on birthdays? Like, I'm sure he doesn't like them. I'm sure he thinks they suck and wishes he was watching ninja movies.
They don't make me mad, though.
No. Well, I mean, they can't make you mad.
My birthdays don't make me mad.
No, other people. I hate other people's birthdays. All right. My bottom two, or you did.
I did top two.
My top two are two. My second one is five.
Ages 2 and 5?
No. My second one.
Okay.
Is 5.
Okay.
Age 5. Dude, it's your first like real number, you know? You hit an even number like 5, 10, 15. So it's your first one and you're just starting to care about birthdays. Yes.
Okay.
When you're turned 5, that is massive when you're 5.
You do know
years
what
old.
A birthday is when
it's
you're 5.
It's important and you think about it for months.
Yeah.
When you turn 5, so you can start doing 5, then you can do the full 5-finger thing when someone asks you how old you are, like, and you still, and now later, you can, you have some memories from when you're five. So to me, five, that's my second.
Yeah.
Number one, anybody who wants some insight into me, 21 was pretty damn good. So I think, again, that's another
you
thing that would have been.
50 West.
I mean,
you
come
do
on.
Do our 50 West
look,
reads.
Look. I mean, you know. I mean, come on. There's no doubt 21 was a good time. I was at Ohio University. I turned 21. Everybody had a good time that night. So anyway, that's my top two. Bottom two birthdays.
Well, as my preamble sort of set it up, I'm going to go with the first two because I have no idea what those were.
Yeah.
I don't
For you personally.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah.
I mean, I have zero recollection.
I hated one and two.
Yeah, I mean, like, I mean, I guess it's an accomplishment to live to one.
Yeah.
Like, my parents didn't mess that up. But, like, I've seen the – and now we're old enough that we still have film. You know, we got to go digging in the crates. I don't know all those people.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel you.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean,
you just – now, this might be a little sensitive because, you know, you just had to host – the number one.
That party was not for her. That party was for us.
Which
we
guess,
survived see, our first year as parents. That's what that party is about, okay? It's about yay us.
Yeah.
Okay? She's still alive, and we have proof. We did it. That's what that party is. Now watch her eat cake, you know, or not eat cake.
Right.
Still can't believe that.
So I don't remember those.
Yeah.
So how could they be good?
Yeah. I actually am with you. Two is my number two.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of pictures circulating of my first birthday.
Okay.
So I can say that I think I had a good time.
Yeah.
And it was, and it made my parents happy. So that makes, I'm happy.
Two was only one roll of film.
Yeah.
At our age. Because now you can take 90 million pictures right up to the clock.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. But back then, you know, film was expensive.
So this is going to be interesting and funny maybe to you. My number one worst. 37. I can't even get away with saying mid-30s anymore. Like,
yeah,
I got to say mid to late.
Yeah.
I don't want to be mid to late 30s. And
you're hanging on to that mid at 30s.
You're hanging on by a thread.
Right.
And once you're, like, dealing with kids, your birthday definitely means nothing anymore.
No, it doesn't.
Only, like, 40 and 50. You don't even get the fives anymore.
No, you don't.
You definitely don't get 37.
No.
It's such an afterthought.
Yeah.
And you just, and that 37 was the first number that made me feel old.
Yeah.
Like 35, I still felt, 35, you know, you're young. 37, I remember thinking like, oh, damn, I'm old.
Yeah.
Like that's an old number. We're damn near 40. 40's going to be tough. I think 40 I might struggle with. All right, that's good. We are so weird. Like that is so amazing that you're. My bottom is your top. And neither of us said 16.
No, yeah. Or 18.
Driving?
Yeah.
Yeah, but 16 with driving is big. That's like freedom. 16 was close for me. 30 I really liked.
Well, see, here's the thing for me. I was the youngest of my class.
Yeah.
So all my friends were driving well before me. So I was like the come get me guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was way – hey. Again, people know my personality. If I don't have to go do it, you're going to come get me?
Yeah.
You're going to drive me around?
Yeah.
I wasn't mad at that. Like, I wasn't really ready to be the pick up the phone and I got to go get somebody. Like, no. Yeah.
Why are you mad?
You know.
building up, Steve.
No. What I don't understand is that late at night, and even downtown, I thought about this, and I thought, no, for safety reasons, like the banks and like downtown Cincinnati should keep traditional red, yellow, green lights in their normal spot. And then I thought more about it. I'm like, no. Like flashing yellow, flashing red at like 10:30 at night. Like I'm tired of being the one, and I know people are going to say, just blow the red. And I can't say that you should do that. And that I would never do such a thing when I was by myself at 1 a.m. at a 4-way stop with a 2-minute red. But anyway, it's safe. No, you got to follow all traffic laws on the BBP. But no, you should flat, like, that's stupid. That makes me mad. It elongates my trip overnight. And I understand you got to you know, there's drunk people and you gotta be safe and there's pedestrians. And I don't know. I just think at that, at a certain point of night, from like 10:30 PM to like 4:30 AM, there should be no hard, like no greens.
Yeah.
Just flashing reds and yellows, make everyone slow down, but no one has to like stop.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's making me mad. Like the late night,
I know,
full light intersections.
There should be more considerations to late night lights. Yeah. I'm with you on that.
Make me mad.
I'm with you on that. You're always so traffic and car based. You must. I don't ride with you much. That must be hell for somebody.
I think that's why my wife falls asleep immediately.
I didn't want to hear this.
Constant swearing and anger.
I'm sure my happy is probably pretty easy to predict. You know, daughter's first birthday.
Yeah.
I made it.
You did.
I made it.
Yeah. Barely. You physically fell apart a year ago time.
I did. It was time a year ago where my back was like, no.
Yeah.
No, not happening.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, it was awesome. My daughter, there was two things we wanted her to do this weekend, and that was crawl across the tarp in the diaper dash where they had set up like a 15-foot tarp, and all these babies go and crawl in. She had no interest in that. She sat there with her face of, no, I'm not doing it. I don't know why you want me to do it, and I think it's silly, and I'm just going to sit here,
yeah,
and we're not going to go anywhere. And the other thing was to eat cake and smash cake, and she looked at the cake, and she said, no, I'm not doing it. I have no interest in doing that. I'm just going to sit here and eat a whole avocado because I like those. I don't like your cake, and it doesn't mean I have to eat them. So good on her. I'm happy that she has a mind of her own, even if it's doing the things, not doing the things that I want her to do.
Yeah,
that's going to go on for 18 years.
Yeah.
And then well beyond that.
It would have been interesting. So have you, you're not Polish. There's a Polish tradition at 1 year old where you put the shot glass, the half dollar or quarter, and then the rosary in front of the baby.
Oh, geez.
And whichever one they pick, you can guess which path of life each one represents.
Oh, man.
And, That's a fun.
I'm
Polish
surprised
tradition.
We didn't do that because there's Polish in my wife's family. So I'm surprised.
Yeah.
I think if
I mean
my
you
wife's
gotta have a little.
Was here, she'd have brought all.
Yeah.
Four of
when
those.
You mentioned like the first birthday is for the adults, that's definitely an adult thing.
Oh yeah.
Because then you just like make fun of the child and their parents for whatever one they pick.
Yeah. Oh no. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening to the BBP. Great to have you back here this week. We'll be back again next week after rookie minicamp, giving you some impressions of how the guys looked and who was fat. Maybe someone was fat. You know,
a guy you can see from the bridge without binoculars.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, so thanks everybody for listening. We'll be back next week on the BBP. We'll talk to you later.